Podcasts you love.
From people you trust. This is TWIT.
Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my KFI podcast. This show originally aired on Saturday, September 16th, 2006, on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. This is show 283.
September 16th, 2006.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 11:06, I'm Deborah Mark, KFI News.
Thank you, Deborah. Good morning, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Great to talk to you. It's a Saturday morning, and we're going to talk high tech from now till 2 in the afternoon. 1-800, let me give you the phone number so you can call right now. Get that phone going. 1-800-520-1KFI. That's the phone number. 1-800-520-1534. We talk about any kind of technology, not just computers and the internet, but also cell phones and camcorders, PDAs, home theater, anything like that. Biotech, space tech. You know, if you could put the word tech at the end of it, I'll talk about it. 1-800-520-1KFI. I may not be an expert in bio and space tech, but I know there are lots of them listening. So, you know, this is the stuff that's really changing how we live, how we work, how we play, how we study. It's big stuff, and it's fun, and it's fascinating, and I'm really glad you're here to talk about it with me. I guess I mentioned to Bill we're going to talk about biometrics, which I think is a fascinating subject. I do want to get to that, but we'll talk about that later because, of course, the big story of the week is Apple's It's Showtime. And you remember last week I said, oh, they're going to do a movie, you know, store. They did that. They're going to do probably a new iPod widescreen, touchscreen. They didn't do that. They did pre-announce something called iTV. And really looking at all of the stuff as a whole, it became very clear what was going on and what Apple was up to, as it always does in hindsight. You know, we all guess what they're going to do, and then they do it, and then we say, oh, well, that makes sense. Let me explain why they did that instead of what we thought they would do. It's kind of, you know, I like to play chess as a hobby, and it's kind of reminds me of a chess game where you've got a real master playing the game, Steve Jobs. I mean, really good. Very, very good guy. Better than almost anybody analyzing it or watching it. And we're all sitting here thinking what his next move is going to be. And we all debate it back and forth and guess. And then he makes the move, often a surprise. And just like in a real chess match, all the commentators go, oh, well, yes. Why? Let's see. Oh, of course, that's a brilliant move. In hindsight, it makes sense. At the end of the event, what Steve said, and I think this is kind of key to the whole thing, he said, Apple is now in your den, by which I mean it's a home computer with your iMac. It is in your living room, and that's the new ITV piece of the puzzle. It is in your car, and he pointed out that 70% of all new cars in the U.S. will have iPod connectors in them this year, or 2007. 70%, and it's in your pocket. And of course, he's talking about the iPod. Now, when he says it that way, up the strategy is clear. I mean, it's a good strategy for a company. Apple everywhere. Microsoft for years. In fact, it was engraved on the pathway up to the headquarters in Redmond. Microsoft's motto and plan was a computer on every desk running Microsoft software. I imagine that's still their plan. And when you hear it that way, you can see, well, Microsoft and Windows, a computer on every desk really sounds like business. And they certainly own that market. They're very successful. They're trying to get in the home market, and they've done well in the home market. But Apple's not, they said, in your den. They're not saying they want to be in business. I mean, they do have a big pro market in terms of music and movies. But I think, you know, from their point of view, their core strategy is Apple in the home as a home computer. where there's a lot of growth possibilities, and I agree with them. I think it's the right computer for most home users. Apple in your living room, and this is the new piece of the puzzle that makes everything click into place. So they announced, just to cover the announcements, you know, roughly, they announced no major changes in the iPods. The changes are all cosmetic. So there's a new 80 gig iPod with video, so it's bigger. The price has dropped a lot, $249 for a 30 gig, $349 for an 80 gig. Significant price drops, making them competitive with everything on the market. You know, one of the knocks against Apple's always been that they're more expensive than everybody else in the market. And they've been very aggressive about addressing this, both in the computer hardware and now in the iPod hardware. They are on a par with all the other iPods, I mean, all the other MP3 players on the market. $249 for 30 gigs, $349 for an 80 gig player. Does video. They changed a little bit of the user interface. If you're an iPod user, you know one of the problems with it, especially as you get bigger and bigger hard drives and you've got thousands and thousands of songs, is scrolling with the thumb all the way down to the song that you're trying to get. Well, now they've got an alphabetic scroll for artists and songs, so you can just scroll to the letter, press the button, and it jumps to that letter. That saves you a lot of time. They should have had that years ago. New gapless playback, another thing Apple should have had years ago. One of the things I think that keeps a lot of music lovers from using digital playback devices of any kind is they don't do a good job of albums that are continuous. Albums like Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon or a symphony, where, yes, the album is, the CD is divided into tracks, so you can jump to tracks, but when you play it, it just plays through continuously. It sounds like one long track. And if you do that on any MP3 player, there's a pause. Slight, but annoying. Just about that long. And you know, that's, if you're listening to a symphony, you're listening to Dark Side of the Moon, you don't want to hear that. You don't want to know that there's a new track. Well, the gapless fixes that, and it really does a good job. In fact, Steve played a Beethoven symphony and Dark Side of the Moon, and it was very clear. I mean, it just flows. Something it should have had years ago. I'm not sure why they didn't do it. Maybe there was a technical reason they couldn't do it, but they can now, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing, as Martha would say. Let's see. They have new looks for both the Shuffle and the Nano. The Nano is going retro. The Nano now looks just like the old Mini, the old iPod Mini looked like, with a rounded aluminum case, but it's the size of the Nano, so it's small. Because it's back to the brushed aluminum cases instead of the polycarbonate, scratching won't be as much of an issue. That was a big complaint on the Nano, but also they can put colors on the sucker, and they've now gone back to the green, the pink, the blue, the, you know, all the different colors. I have a list on my blog. I should go to my blog because I wrote it all down. As Steve was talking, I took notes. They did a weird thing. You can only get the, there's three sizes, 2, 4, and 8 gigabytes. And you can only get the 2 in a silver. That's $149. The colors only come on the $199 version, the 4 gigabyte. That has blue, pink, green, silver, and black. And there's now an 8 gigabyte for $250. Now, compare that to $250, you can get 30 gigs on a hard drive-based iPod. But this is solid state, good for exercising or any kind of rough and tumble environment. 8 gigs, $250, but that's black only, which I'm not sure I understand that. Don't you think people who want 8 gigs might want a green one? I don't know. They say they improve the earphones. I haven't listened to them. I don't know. 10 million Shuffles sold. I didn't realize how successful the Shuffle was. That was the one that looked like a pack of gum. And now it's the size of a quarter. It's the size of the little clip they used to sell for a remote control. It has a little clip in the back. It has a little mini dock, because there's no USB connector on it anymore. It's too small. And it has a little mini dock. It docks in the dock. It's a gigabyte only. World's smallest MP3 player, according to Steve Jobs. And it's $79. That won't be out till next month. But that's just in time for, that's a Christmas gift. That's what they're aiming that at, aren't they? Teenagers, $79. My daughter has lost a couple of iPods, I'm sorry to say. And she's not getting anything fancier. Even at $79, I'm going to be mad when she loses it, but I'm not giving her a $250 one to lose. The iTunes was updated to include movies. That was a big story, and this is how they're moving into the den. You can buy... Now, here's the deal. Amazon, on Thursday, announced their own movie store, and they've got all of these movie companies behind them. There was only one conspicuously absent from the Amazon movie store, Disney. Turns out Steve Jobs is the number one shareholder in Disney because when they bought Pixar, they gave him a bunch of stock. He's the biggest shareholder in Disney. Guess who Apple's iTunes Music Store will be selling? Disney. And only Disney. But, you know, it's Disney, it's Touchstone, it's Miramax, and it's Pixar. So they have a lot of good movies, including Pirates of the Caribbean, all the Pixar movies. 75 movies. Here's the pricing. It's a little confusing. $9.99 for old stuff. Now, you download the movie. It's about 2 gigabytes. It's not quite DVD quality, but it's a close. It's pretty good quality, I have to say. You download it. 2 gigabytes if you have a high-speed connection. That's maybe half an hour. Maybe an hour if you have a slow, high-speed connection. So it's faster than you can watch a movie. And he said you can start watching it, you know, a few minutes into the download. And that makes sense if you're downloading it at full speed. This is no good for dial-up users, obviously. If you are pre-ordering a new movie, let's say you want to order the new Pirates of the Caribbean, not out yet, or the Cars, not out yet, but will be soon, you could pre-order that. That'll be $12.99. You buy it day of release, which is the same day the DVD comes out, $12.99. After that, $14.99. So they're giving you some incentive to buy ahead of time or buy day of release. If you're buying a relatively new release, but not on the day of release, it's $14.99, which is too much. I don't think they'll sell many at that price. The biggest news is that all the TV, and they have hundreds of shows from 40 different television networks, all of the music videos, all of the movies are now at 640 by 480 resolution. That's a big improvement. That's double the resolution. And it means it'll still play on the iPod and look fine on the iPod, but that's a little screen. But when you hook it up to your TV, it will look good. It's what they call enhanced definition for 4x3 for television shows. It'll look as good as a DVD. It'll look good. Movies, 16x9 widescreen movies, because of the black bars top and the bottom, will not look as good as a DVD. They will be lower resolution. He put them up on the big screen. I mean, and big screen in the auditorium, and it looked good. I was sitting in the front row, and it you know, it was fine. I think it's a big improvement and a must needed. It must, you know, you're not going to buy a movie at 320 by 240, so he had to do that. The big story, though, is the ITV, and I'm running out of time. I want to get to some calls, so I'll tell you what. We'll talk about the ITV. This won't be out till next year, but I think it's really the final piece in the puzzle and a very important, I think, product for Apple. They're talking about it in the chat room, and there's some, you know, Mike said, I'm not going to buy that. Well, I think people might when they understand what it really does. It's a very interesting device, and I think a good idea. We'll talk about that a little later on. 1-800-520-1KFI, 1-800-520-1534. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take your calls next on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
The KFI News team works weekends. KFI News, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Woo-hoo! 1125 KFI. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Phone number 1-800-520-1KFI. I will talk a little more about Apple's ITV. I think that's the most important piece of the puzzle so far and really tells you a lot about what Apple's up to, but I'll talk about that next hour. And then tomorrow we'll talk about Zune because Microsoft revealed more details on Thursday about its so-called iPod killer, the Zune, the one that Toshiba's going to be making. And a surprising omission on the Zune, something that actually could kill it if everybody's interpreting it properly. But I'll talk about that tomorrow on the show tomorrow. Because, frankly, this isn't my show to gas on and on. This is your show to ask questions like Dean in Yorba Linda. Welcome to Dean to KFI.
Oh, good day. Hey, two things real fast. I called a couple weeks ago about my Verizon VX6700 that was broken.
Yeah.
I found a company in San Antonio, Texas that specializes in repairing cell phones.
Is this the one that got locked? What happened to your cell phone?
No, the navigation, the little black navigation.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the button broke, yeah. So what's the name of the company?
In Texas.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I could tell you. I'm driving right now, and I'll have to email to you.
Yeah, send me an email, because I'd love to put that in the show notes. Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes.
It was $50, and I got it fixed.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, but here's my question. Nothing to do with computers this time, but I have a 5.1 on Kia stereo system.
Yep.
It's got one optical import. But I just upgraded my Dish network to the Dish DVR, which has optical out, and my DVD has optical out. So I now have two devices that are optical out,
right,
but only one optical in.
Right.
Is there a, I mean, it's more of a question of, do I really need to have optical out for my Dish DVR? And if I should, is there a device I could use to connect both the Dish DVR and DVD into the one optical out?
There are optical switchers.
Is it manual or is it? Is it automatic?
That's a good question. It would be nice if it switched when it sensed sound, wouldn't it?
Either that, or I've got the Harmony remote, that really cool Logitech Harmony remote. So if it's automatic, I can program the remote to switch.
Yeah. Yeah. You could do that. It has a remote control. It's from soundprofessionals.com. And among other things, they make a Toslink switcher. But let me talk a little bit about why you might want to use Toslink and what optical is all about. It's essentially digital. So you have two ways you can transmit audio. One is analog, and that would be, you know, those red and white left and right RCA jacks. That's pure analog. Right. It's a sine wave. You know, it's pure analog. But on a Dish and many other things, a DVD player, the sound starts as digital. And really, the question is, where do you want that digital converted? Where is it going to be converted? Where would it be best to convert it? Now, there are a couple of reasons to go one way or the other. One is you want whatever machine's going to do the best conversion, although that's not very challenging. But also, you want to keep it digital as long as you can, because if it's analog too soon, it can get RF and other noise into it. So you do usually want to take the digital out, and put it as close to your receiver or your TV as possible. Let your receiver or your TV do the conversion to analog. It does have to be converted to analog eventually, or it won't play on the speakers. So the rule of thumb is keep it digital as long as you can. And in this case, I think that would be a good reason to get a switcher. I don't know how much they are. They're probably not. Let's see, $69. That's not bad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It is 11:29, and it's, I think it's Ginger, no, I'm sorry, Deborah Mark in the KFI News Center.
Listen to KFI live online 24/7, KFI, AM640.com.
11:38, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Interesting debate going on in the chat room. I encourage you to visit irc.dslextreme.com, and thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the server for that chat room. Interesting debate going on over whether Steve Jobs is a genius or not. And, he's not Albert Schweitzer. He's not Albert Einstein. He's a businessman. So, you know, but in the category of businessman, I think there's no question at least in the last 6 years, Steve has shown himself to be very astute, very bright. Maybe not early on, but, you know, we all learn. He's a young guy. He has taken a company that was dying. And I would tell you, I'm one of the people who said 10 years ago, don't buy a Mac. Apple's going to be out of business. Dvorak thought that. I thought that. We all thought Apple was doomed under Gil Amelio. Gil did something. Now, actually, Woz says, and Woz is a friend of Gil Amelio's, and Woz says, now, people don't give Gil enough credit. He was turning the company around. And he did do one thing that was smart. He was looking for a new operating system. They realized that the Apple Macintosh System 9 was antiquated. They knew they needed to update. They looked at a couple of different companies, including BOS, which had a great operating system, but eventually acquired Next Step. From a company called Next that was run by a guy named Steve Jobs. And in the process of acquiring Next and their operating system, they acquired Steve. And frankly, that the two of them together, that was pretty good. Next Step was an amazing operating system. It was, in fact, the right thing to do for many reasons, one of which is that Next Step was running on Intel. And it made it easy for them to change platforms in midstream, to start building machines for Intel. And it was many years later, but they did. They kept the Intel versions alive all that time. Very smart. Bill Arcadia, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, hi, Leo. I have a 5-year-old compact Presario.
Okay.
And it's a friend of mine's, and I'm trying to fix it on the cheap. And I think it has a bad hard drive.
All right.
And I'm not sure how to replace that and still use a recovery CD.
Ah, sometimes you can't, especially with those compacts. They used to put a hidden partition on there. And the hidden partition had information about the computer, and the recovery disk will not work unless it sees that hidden partition. I think, actually, HP still does this. A number of companies do this.
Would Ghost work, do you think? Because it's still, the old one still kind of works, but...
Oh, okay. If it still kind of works, yeah. What you should do is get a new hard drive. And all the new hard drives you either come with or you can download from the manufacturer a program that will do a... You don't even need Ghost. We'll do a bit-for-bit copy of the drive. You know, because you figure you're buying a new hard drive, you want to copy the contents of the old drive to the new. And so it'll do a bit-for-bit copy of the... To the best of its ability. If the drive's failing, you know, I don't know how good it'll be, but it'll do the best it can to copy that data from the old drive to the new.
Where do you get that software?
I'll put links in the show notes. We have a link to all of them, but it, you know, if it's a Mac store or Western Digital or Seagate, all of these companies either will bundle a disk with the hard drive. It depends if you get the real retail package or you get the OEM package. If they don't, you can go online to the manufacturer's website and download it.
Oh, okay.
And Max Blast is the one for Mac Store. You know, they're all different. It's the same idea, though. They all will blast the data from the old drive to the new one.
Okay.
And that's what you'll want to do. Now, it won't be a perfect job, but, you know, it's like a DOS boot disk, and you make a boot CD, and you'll do it. And then, if with any luck, it'll have copied the critical hidden partition data, and then you should be able to use the recovery.
All right, Leo, thanks.
You're very welcome. You're a nice friend to do that. Gary, New York, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm great, Gary. How are you?
Good. Got a question for you. I'm looking at switching from a six-year-old Dell Dimension to Mac, but I'm confused. iMac, Mac Pro. I've been drooling over both of them at the Apple store on Fifth Avenue here in New York.
I say for most people, the iMac is the right choice. Unless you're a pro, graphics, video, 3D designer, that kind of thing.
Okay, now how about, what would be the easiest way for a person who spent all his life on Windows to switch?
Well, you know, you're going to have to go through a little bit, but it's not that hard. You know, a computer is a computer. You know, it'll be fun. It'll be little things that'll bug the heck out of you. For instance, to close a window on Windows, you click in the upper right-hand corner. You click that X, right? To close a window in the Mac, you click in the upper left-hand corner. Now, you know, really, that's not a big difference. There's a close box in both. It's just on the left or right. But it's enough that your brain's going to go, every time for the first few weeks, it's going to, oh, gosh, it's not there. Oh, it's not there. There's little things like that. In Windows, you can grab any edge of any window to resize the window. On the Mac, you can only resize it from the lower right-hand corner. You know, score one for Windows, by the way, on that one. The Mac comes with the world's worst mouse, the Mighty Mouse, which is Apple's imitation three-button mouse. They couldn't bring themselves to actually release a three-button mouse, so they faked it. I would recommend buying a $10 Kensington or Belkin or just any old cheap Windows three-button mouse. The beauty of it is you plug it in and it works. So you don't have... I mean, that's the nice thing. It just works. You don't. At least Apple put the drivers in for it. So there's little things like that. You probably would want to get a book... there are some books for switchers. There are some sites for switchers. I'll put those on the website. You know, there's a very good switch site that gives you a lot of information, you know, that people run into. But truthfully, if you go out and get maybe OS X, The Missing Manual, my buddy David Pogue's book, or my OS X Tiger book, and just go through it, I don't think it's going to take you more than a few weeks. There'll be a few weeks of discomfort, as there would be if you went from, you know, it's similar to if you're a Mercedes fan and you go to a Japanese car, you go from the German style to the Japanese style. It's just like that. It's just like the switches are not right where you expect them, and it takes a little while to get used to it.
Okay, now is the iMac expandable? Because one thing that I ran into with my Dell is that I started with 20 gig hard drive. I'm now up to 300 gigs with the storage in there.
It's expandable, and you can put a new hard drive, bigger hard drive, and you can put more RAM in it. But it is not expandable as much as a PC was. You can't put a new video card in it very easily. I find that most people think they're going to expand stuff and don't.
I'm looking at hard drive expandability.
Yeah, hard drive you can expand, absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Leo.
You're welcome. You know, for maximum expandability, that's why you get a Pro. But the Pro is, I bought a Pro. And I haven't got it yet, I'll come this week. But the reason I got a Pro is I'm using it for high-end audio editing and potentially video editing. And so I wanted the performance, the horsepower, and I'm using it to run, I want to run Windows full speed as well. So it's kind of an all-in-one package for me. But for most home users, I think the iMac, it's look, that's a Core 2 in the new ones, which means it's dual processor, very fast, fast bus, uses the fastest memory out there. It's a beautiful screen. I mean, the form factor is gorgeous. It's all in that screen, so you don't have a lot of wires. I just think that, and as far as performance goes, plenty of performance. The big difference is it's not very upgradable. You have a limited number of video cards. You're probably not going to be changing the video card. You can add memory, but in a limited fashion, it doesn't have as many slots. And you can add, you could put a bigger hard drive in there. That's pretty easy. Don't, you know, I think a lot of people buy computers thinking they're going to upgrade, and very few do. Very few do. Take a look at both of them. I think for most people, the iMac is plenty. I really do. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:47.
KFI On Demand and LegalZoom.com bring you your favorite weekend shows in their entirety. Handle on the law.
This guy just takes your money and tells you to plead guilty. What do you need that for?
Leo Laporte.
Protect yourself because you're using an operating system that's full of holes.
John and Ken Saturday.
Doesn't that mean you were just brainwashed as a child by your parents with their devout teaching?
More stimulating weekends on demand at KFIAM640.com.
High-speed internet, my friends. It's the future. It's the, well, you know, it really, it's the present right now. In fact, if you're still on dial-up, you're living in the past. Get into the 21st century and do it for less. If you haven't yet purchased high-speed internet, you can pat yourself on the back because now you can get it for less than ever before. If you're paying more than $12.95 for high-speed internet, maybe you ought to listen up. DSL Extreme, my internet service provider. I'm using them right now. I love them. Offers high-speed internet for $12.95 a month. That's half what AOL charges for their dial-up. You don't need a second line. You may save money. And it's great. If you're worried that it's too complicated, it's as easy to install as a phone. You just plug a jack into the wall. That's it. You don't need a second line. You get 24-hour free tech support from local guys. There's no setup fee. There's no charge for the modem. And it's guaranteed for a year. I mean, I can't think of a single negative on this. This is just the way to go. Call 866-2-GET-NET right now. 866-2-GET-NET. Some geographic restrictions do apply, though. So you may want to visit them online and pre-qualify DSLExtreme.com or just call them. They're great people. They're very helpful. It's actually a good way to find out if you're going to like a company is just call that number and talk to them. See how helpful they are. 866-2-GET-NET. I think you'll like them. DSLExtreme.com. The highest speed internet for the lowest price in the country, $12.95 a month. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme.
Information doesn't take the weekend off.
Neither do we.
KFI, all weekend long.
KFI AM 640 for stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Jeb One's asking in the chat room about network attached storage, and he wants something with gigabit and RAID 1. I would suggest RAID 5, Jeb One. This is something you don't see on desktop PCs because they do a BIOS RAID, software RAID, and so you usually see 0.1 or 0+1. But RAID 5 gives you mirroring and striping and hardware redundancy, and it's a professional high, it's a hardware RAID. And I use the Infront NAS storage devices, Infrant, and highly recommend them. A little pricey, but I think well worth it. Well worth it. 1-800-520-1KFI. The show notes are online. Shuby's working on them, and you can get there by going to KFIAM640.com. Clicking my name, Leo Laporte, under shows, and then the official website link on that page under my smiling picture. Or just go to leo.am, and that also has a link to my blog, to Twit, my podcasts. It has a link to the chat room. If you get there, if you get to leo.am, you can get anywhere else. The crossroads of Leo's world. John in L.A., welcome to KFI. Hey, John, are you there? Oh, are you there, John?
Yes.
Yeah, there we go.
Yes. Hey, I'm wondering what the best way is to promote my website, to get it on top of Google searches. Are these pay-per-click systems
no.
the only way to go? Or
do not use these people who claim they'll move you up there. And the reason is you run a great risk of being delisted from Google. What you've got to do is be very careful not to do something Google sees as gaming Google, as trying to trick them. The minute they see you as doing something that to trick the search results, they can delist you. And once you're delisted from Google as a website, you do not exist. If people can't find you on Google, generally they don't find you. So it pays to follow the rules. Now, this is not a short answer. And in fact, this is a book. This is several books. But I'll give you kind of the gist of it. First of all, what Google will say is the best way to rank high on Google is to put out good content. And really, that's a cop-out on their part, but it's true. If you do a good site that people love, you're going to rank better. Now, how does Google work? If you know how Google works, this will help you. And in fact, Google recently issued a patent application, and in the patent application gave us details that we had never seen before about how they work. One thing they've always talked about is their PageRank system, and it's essentially based on how many quality sites link to you. So the more, now I say it's important to say quality sites, the more quality sites link to you, and a quality site is what? A site that's highly ranked. So it's kind of a vicious circle. The more quality sites that link to you, the higher you will rank. That's how they do their page ranking. The theory being, if a site's good, other good sites will link to it. So a link exchange with real sites is a good thing to do. But you've got to be careful. You can't use these services that are actually just making link farms, because Google will see that and they'll say, no, you're cheating. You can't fake it. You have to go to other sites that are similar to yours and say, I'll put a link to you on my site if you put a link to me on your site. And it has to be legitimate. They also, it's some things that are kind of surprising. For instance, if they see that you've registered the domain name for 1 year, which is the shortest amount you can register it for, that casts you under a cloud of suspicion, because there are a lot of spammers, link farms, and others who try to cheat Google by creating short-term pages with lots of links on them. The response to that is to register your domain name for more than 1 year, for 3 years, 5 years. The longer you've paid for it, the more, in Google's mind, and they're right, the more likely you're a serious site. You're not a cheater. If you have the terms that you want to be searched for, should be your page title. So, you know, when you go to a website, you see in the title some text. That's actually a HTML title tag in your header. That should have the stuff you want people to. So if you go to leo.am, you'll see it says leo.am. It'll say Leo Laporte's KFI radio show notes. Now, that's what that page is. But I want to make sure that if you do a search for Leo Laporte, you find me, right? I want to make sure you do a search for KFI, you find me. So that's why that's in the title. So those are a few things that you can do. But really, the meta tags don't make any difference. Don't pay a firm to link to you, because that can have worse consequences. Go out, get other sites, similar sites, related sites to link to you. Do a good site that other people quote and link to. All of these things will help you a lot. Now, you can buy AdWords on Google, and that's a little different. What that means is you'll get an ad, which means when people do it, let's say you're selling horseshoes. You can buy it. You can buy that word, that keyword. You won't show up as a standard search result. You'll show up, as you know, in the ads on the right-hand side. When people search for horseshoes, they'll get whatever they get on the left, and on the right-hand side, they'll get some ads. That's another way, if you're willing to pay Google, to get up there. The more popular the searched keyword, they do auctions, the more it's going to cost you. I think it's best just to make a great site. Leo, I'll put some more information on the show notes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:59. Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
September 16th, 2006.
Southland weather from KFI, a mostly sunny this afternoon, highs in the 70s and 80s. It's going to start to getting the Santa Ana winds coming in, so it's going to be clear and breezy overnight, lows in the 60s. Sunday, windy and warm, highs about to at least 10 degrees warmer than today. Currently at 72 in downtown L.A., 74 in Burbank, 65 in Newport Beach, and at 72 in Irvine. KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. It's 12:06. I'm Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
On the car outside my house, you know. It's such a shame she's not with me.
KFI. Thank you, Lisa. AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Give my whole life to
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. That's my phone number, 1-800-520-1534. One of the things I'd like to talk about is this ITV Apple announced. Now, that Steve Jobs said that was a code name. They may not call it that, although I bet you they will now. Very rare that Apple pre-announces hardware. And the only reason they even considered it this time is because they have nothing like it. It makes sense to pre-announce hardware if it's not going to cannibalize your business. It's not going to take away sales of stuff you already sold. And it might undermine a competitor who's selling something similar. So, no surprise, really, that they did that. So the question is, what is the ITV and what does it do? And, you know, there's some debate over what it is because it's not, you know, I think he didn't give all the details. For instance, some people are saying, is there a hard drive in there or not? I don't think so. In fact, I'm positive there's not. It's a little box. Here's the theory behind it. You've got your TV in your living room, and you've got all this content on your computer down the hall in the den. You, especially if you're, and this is the key, buying stuff from iTunes like TV shows and movies, it's all on your computer, it's all on your iPod, it's not on your TV. You want to get it to the TV, but you don't want to string wires. You don't want to drag your computer in. You could, I guess, put it on the iPod, connect the iPod up, but that, you know, that's not ideal. How do you get that, all that stuff, your photos, your music, your video, your TV shows, and your movies that are all on your computer, maybe more than one computer in the house, over to the television? Well, you do it wirelessly via Wi-Fi, of course. And there have been other companies that do this with audio. There's Sonos. There's Roku. We talk about this a lot. Prismic. And you could, if you put a Mac Mini with front row next to your TV, you could do that. But then you have to buy a whole computer. This is $299. It's not a computer. It's just an interface. It has wireless built in. He didn't say what kind of Wi-Fi. My suspicion is the reason Apple isn't shipping it today is they want to put 802.11n in it, but n is still in draft, and there's some debate over it, and it's probably a few more months. Oh, interesting. Right about first quarter 2007 that they're going to finally ratify that. So once n is official, then I think that's when you'll see the ITV. It has wireless. You put it next to your TV. It has all the connectors you'd want for your TV. HDMI components. So it's got high def, high quality connectors. Optical audio out for 5.1 surround sound. It's got analog as well for the audio. It's just an interface. It's a Wi-Fi interface to your TV. It works with iTunes and on the Mac or Windows and iPhoto on the Mac. It has some new front row software. That's Apple's Media Center software on it. So it's got a simple remote control, very easy to navigate, very easy to play back. All of those movies you're buying in the iTunes music store, that's the key, right? And people say, well, why, you know, it's not a TV. If you only put a hard drive in it and a TV recording unit, it could be a TiVo. He doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want you recording from television. He wants you buying it from Apple. It's not, this is why it's key to Apple's strategy. But it's interesting. I think people have changed the way they think about television. It used to be, you know, when I was a kid, you watched a TV show when it was on. We all got together 8 o'clock every Sunday night to watch Ed Sullivan or Gunsmoke or I Love Lucy or The Man from U.N.C.L.E. or The Brady Bunch or Saturday Night Live. You watched it when it was on. You didn't have a choice. Then the VHS recorder came out. It was still too hard to use. People could, in theory, time shift. That was starting in the mid-70s and really took off in the 80s. They could maybe time shift. You know, most people didn't because it was so complicated and it's such a pain. But it started that that transition from watching something when it's on to watching it when you wanted to watch it. And people like that. The TiVo came out, and man, that really opened some eyes. Wow. And now it's pretty easy to use. I can have a, instead of just one tape and I have to find the tape and put it in, I could push a button on my remote control and I can have a list of 20, 30, 100 shows that I can watch anytime that I want to watch them. And I can easily get through the commercials. People like that. They said, oh, this is how to watch TV. I don't want to have to stay up until 11:30 at night to watch Saturday Night Live or to watch Leno. I don't have to anymore. I can watch it when it's on. I can watch The Daily Show in the morning if I want. And it's reconditioned us. We know, you know, there's a whole generation that mocks the notion of having to sit down and watch a TV show when it's on. It's like, what are you talking about? My kids, you know, when Project Runway's on, they don't run to the TV to watch it. They just pull it up on the TiVo. They watch the old shows first. They let it record it because you know why? They don't want to watch the commercials. They want to be able to fast forward through them, so they don't watch it live. I bet you do the same thing, don't you? So what that's done is it's conditioned us to the notion that the broadcast signal is not what's important. What's important is what's on our hard drive. That's what we're going to watch. Well, what's on your hard drive can come from anywhere. It can come from the internet, too, can it? Doesn't matter to you. You don't care. If you're not watching a show when it's on, if you're watching it when you want to watch it, doesn't matter how it got to you, when it got to you, even how long it took to get to you, even if you had to download it. So that's the revolution, and I think that's where Apple really has now put in a piece that's kind of key. You've got it on your computer. How do you get it to your TV so that you can watch that guy? Just as you would watch a regular TV show. Now, hackers are going to, and I'm already thinking about how you do this, tie in BitTorrent and with scripts and other ways of getting TV shows besides the stuff that Apple's selling, but get, you know, more stuff on there. Don't you think that's the next step, is you're going to figure out ways to get all of your video on that? And YouTube video, too. And everything. And all of a sudden, what's coming in over the internet is actually more important, or it's certainly equal to what's coming in over the cable or the satellite or the antenna. It's equal. It doesn't matter. You don't care. Who cares how you got it? You don't care where the milk you get by in the grocery store, if it got to you by train, truck, or airplane, as long as it's fresh. Who cares how you got the TV show? As long as it's there and the quality's good. And that's what's happening. And, of course, it's scaring cable companies, scares satellite companies, scares everybody who's in the content delivery business. It's great for content creators because it gives us new ways to get our content to you. And so I think the ITV is really spot on. I think it's exact. It might be a little expensive. I think if he made it $100, $150, and we always say this about Apple hardware, if they only made it $100 less, it would really sell. If they only made those movies $9.99 instead of $12.99, they'd really sell. But Apple, I don't know if they do market research or it's all gut or what, but Apple prices it right at the top, the highest price point they can get away with. Well, hey, they're a business. Maximize profit. And so it's, $2.99, it pinches a little, doesn't it? It pinches. Should be $1.99, maybe $1.50. $2.99 pinches, but that's how they price stuff. And maybe in a year it'll be less. But I do think you'll see a lot of people buy it because it solves a big problem. Now, only we early adopters, and I imagine a lot of you listening to the show, are already putting content on our computer that we would want to watch on the TV, but that's going to become more and more common too. You know, if there are 40 networks selling over 200 different shows on iTunes, there are 75 movies now just from Disney, but as soon as the other motion picture companies watch how it works, and that's what they did with TV, remember when Apple came out with TV shows, there were only a handful of shows, four, there were not even a handful, four shows you could buy. Desperate Housewives, Lost, old Alfred Hitchcock shows, but there are 200 now. Same thing will happen with movies. The movie companies are watching Amazon, they're watching Apple. If Apple succeeds, if people start buying movies, you bet they'll be there. Movie companies love it, by the way. They have wanted to sell movies directly to you for a long time. They hate it. They make very little from the cable company airings. They make very little. They would much prefer to either get you to buy a DVD or, better yet, to get you to buy it online. Because the DVD costs them money to make, to drive over in a truck. Once they make one digital copy of a movie, it costs them nothing. Apple pays the bandwidth. Gives them more than half. I think it's 60%. I would guess it's at least 60 cents on the dollar for every dollar you spend on movies. The movie companies are going to love this. They make more money. They get rid of the cable companies. They've never liked them anyway. It's a big opportunity there. Or am I wrong? Mike B. in the chat room says, I would never buy such a thing. I don't need it. Would you? 1-800-520-1KFI. 1-800-520-1534. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Handle on the news, warts and all. Monday morning, 6 to 7. KFI, AM 640.
On KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. Dennis, Utah, welcome to KFI. Hey, Dennis.
Hello, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm good.
That I'm calling is I have a question about blocking email spam. And I have to warn you, you know, I'm old enough now that I think I've forgotten more than I ever knew. And I was actually introduced to the computer years and years ago when I started doing bookkeeping with something, I think it was called a Commodore. And in addition to that, in the last week or two, my family has bought me a Media Center PC that has a Core 2 deal or
that's
something
a big,
of that
That's
nature.
A big jump, yeah.
And I think I've died and gone to heaven. But I think on my other computer, I have a 120 gigabyte drive, and I think probably at least 100 gigabytes of it is trying to block senders. What do I do?
Wow. Block senders, huh?
So, yeah, that's what I'm using in the email program, because I just haven't found anything else that would help me sort it out.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things. You've been using this email address for a while, no doubt.
I have, yeah, and it's kind of important because I am a kind of semi-retired bookkeeper, and
yeah, so
I've
so
established a lot of
Yeah,
it is my business, and it's so.
You know, one friend of mine does something. This is the reason is that the longer you use an address, the more likely you are to get spam. It just gets out there, and you're more likely to use it if it's a guessable. So if it's Dennis at earthlink.net, you're going to get spam because Dennis is a common name. If it's Dennis 6349 at earthlink.net, you're less likely to get spam. Although, again, the longer you use it, the more likely you are going to get it. One friend of mine does, is, and I think this is a clever idea, is he appends the date, the year, to his email. So every year he changes his address by putting the current year, Leo2006 at leoville.com. And his friends are just trained, you know, when it comes to 2006, you stop using Leo2005, you start using 2006. And spammers don't know that, so they don't. So at the beginning of every year, he has no spam. He says by the end of the year, he's got a lot of spam, but then he changes the address again. Neither of these are obviously practical for you or for me. I've been using the same address for, let's see, probably 15 years, for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
So there are two good ways to filter spam. And I use both, by the way. One is at the server, and one is locally. The idea is if you can filter the, it's almost like sewage treatment, Dennis. It's like get the lumps first, get the really bad spam first on the server.
Okay.
Because it turns out, you know, the real problem with spam filtering is you don't want to filter out important good messages along with the bad messages.
Right.
And that's a real problem. Well, it turns out 80% of your spam is obviously spam. There's no question. Even the dumbest spam filter can tell and is not going to make a mistake. So what you do is, ideally, is you find find an internet service provider that has server-side filtering. Many do. Spam Assassin is one of the programs they use. Or you contract with a company that does spam server-side spam filtering and have your mail go through it. Now, if you can't get your ISP to do it, the one that is very highly recommended by most companies, I don't use it. I use a commercial service called MailRoute, MailRoute.net. It's the same idea, but I don't think they offer it yet for consumers, or I would recommend it. The one for consumers is OnlyMyEmail.com. OnlyMyEmail.com. And what you'll do is, and I think it's cheap, it's a few bucks a month. What you'll do is all your mail will go through them before it comes to you. And they will just filter out the gross stuff, the really bad, obvious spam. But what that does, is cuts 80% of the junk mail out of your mailbox right away, and you don't even download it. You know, part of the problem is we download all this stuff, right? Because we're getting it from our mail server, so there's a lot.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah,
that's
you open the inbox, and you go, oh, my
full.
Gosh, it's going to take me half an hour to block this
mm-hmm.
stuff.
So I recommend try only my email. You'll be amazed right up front. You'll get you'll get rid of most of the stuff, and it's tuned so that it's smart, so it doesn't get stuff that you want. And that's the real problem with server side filtering, is it's hard to see what it got because it hasn't come to you. So you really don't want it to be too aggressive. Then I use local filtering as well. I'll use, and there are a lot of good programs. Inboxer is the one I use on Windows. You're a Windows user?
Yes, I am.
Inbox, that's right, Media Center. Inboxer is the one I use for Windows. On the Mac, I use SpamSieve. Both of them are very good. They're Bayesian, which means they learn, they get trained, and they're automatic. If they make a mistake by either filtering out something you want, that's a false positive, or by not filtering out something you don't want, you tell them, you spank them. You say, oh, that was spam, that wasn't spam, and they learn. They're very, very good. They learn. If you combine these two solutions, only my email to block out 80% of the really gross stuff, and then a local filter like Inboxer or SpamSieve to get the remainder, you will see one or two spams a day. You will really, your life will change. You initially, with Inboxer and SpamSieve, with the local solutions, you want to look at, you have it go to a folder, you know, a junk mail folder, and you want to look through those periodically, make sure it's not making any mistakes, so that you can say, oh, no, you know, that's my mom. Please don't filter that out. For a long time, my mom's mail, I don't know why I was getting filtered out. She never believed it when I said, Mom, it's my spam filter. She said, right, you don't love me anymore. I know. No, it's my spam filter, Mom. So you train it. Pretty soon it learns, oh, that's Mom. This is a great way to go. It's really the best. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 12:30. Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
John and Ken, Saturdays starting at 3. Now you get 20% more John and Ken in every bite. John and Ken, Saturdays starting at 3.
12:38, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. 1-800-520-1534. Just to finish the thought on spam, because it's, you know, it's funny, with spyware and viruses taking all the attention, security taking all the attention, people aren't talking about spam as much as they used to. I don't think it's any less of a problem. It's, maybe we've just gotten used to it. I do have to say that there are spam solutions out there I do not like and I do not recommend. There are things you should do, of course, to lower your spam incidents. You know, don't use your email address in public. If you're going to give out an email address, even when you buy something, I would suggest creating one of the free web-based mail systems like Hotmail or Yahoo or Google Mail, and have an address for that, for spam. It's not your spam address, but it's the address you give out. That way, if you do get spam because of giving it out, at least it won't go into your main inbox. But I'm telling you, something like only my email or the service I use, mailroute.net, it's just really great. They get 99% of my email is spam, 99.9%. They get it all. I see very little spam. Maybe 20 or 30 messages a day instead of 10,000 or more messages a day. And is it that many? The last time report I got was Leoville addresses receive 1 million emails a day, of which only 30,000 are good. All the rest, 970,000 emails a month. So yeah, that's what is that? That's 30,000, right? Jeez, or is it 3,000? No, it's 30,000 emails a day of spam. And they're gone. I don't see them. Imagine if I had to download that. I'd be downloading email all the time. So they get all that. That's the most gross stuff. They never catch anything that I want. They only catch the really bad stuff. That still leaves me, you know, several hundred messages a day, something like that are spam, but then my local filter gets those. Some other solutions I don't recommend. They work, but I don't recommend them. The challenge response system, and a lot of people like Spam Arrest, a lot of people use this, where... If I send them an email I'll get an email back saying, sorry, we have to make sure you're human. Please enter this code and hit OK. And then, and spammers won't do that, I guess. And then my mail will go through. I don't do it either often because, first of all, I send out a lot of mail approving people for chat rooms, approving people for message boards, and I don't have time to click that. I don't know that it actually came from Spam Arrest. It could be a phishing scam. I don't click links in emails. I just think it's inherently dangerous. I don't want to give any company, any third party, my email address anyway. I don't know who are these guys. Why do they want my information? So I don't do it. So you don't get, if you're using Spam Arrest, you don't get email from me. And I bet there are a lot of other people you don't get email from. It also means that you email every spammer who sends you a message. You send them an email saying, hi, I don't accept spam, but fill out this form. What happens? Well, the spammer knows, hey, we got a good address. We can't get through right now, but let's keep that address on file because that's a good one. So once you start using Spam Arrest, you may never stop. Because you've announced to everybody, you've effectively put your email address on every mailing list now. Because you've said this is a real address. The best way to respond to spammers is no response at all. Any response tells them it's a real address. And it also adds further to the problem because many times spammers don't use real return addresses. So you're spamming somebody else with your Spam Arrest. It just adds to the problem. In no case is it okay to respond to spam. In no case, including Spam Arrest. So I don't recommend any of these challenge response systems. I just think they're it's impolite, it's bad netiquette, and it's bad for you. Graylisting works. Graylisting's another way to do it. Graylisting, and I use my mail route uses graylisting. It's kind of an interesting idea. The idea being, if you there is a in the mail protocols, there is a response that says, I'm busy right now, call back in 15 minutes, in effect. Server busy, you know, that's fine, but server's busy, come back. The way spammers generally work, they don't come back. Their services, their servers are not configured to do that. They move on. They're quick hit artists. They don't come back. So by doing a gray list, you get rid of a lot of spam. There's a disadvantage to it because you may also delay important emails. Sometimes they don't come back for another day. They're supposed to come back in, I think it's 15 minutes to an hour. But sometimes some servers, misconfigured servers, won't check again for 24 hours. So if, you know, that was an important email, you might not get it right away. I haven't had any problems with graylisting, but it is potentially difficult. But the idea is a very good idea. I think one of the reasons we don't talk about spam much anymore is we've got good solutions. Eric Bakersfield, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Eric.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
Very well. How are you?
Real good. I had a question and a half for you.
Okie doke.
Well, that's different than two.
I'm good at the half
email.
Questions. Yes?
I was going to say, I use only my email. It's $4 a month, billed monthly, and I really like it, and this is not a paid commentary.
Oh, good. I'm glad. No, I've never used it. I've read excellent reviews. I'm glad to hear it. So $4 a month, that's nothing, and does a good job for you.
Yes, most of my spam tends to be people spoofing my address anyway, so I don't have quite the problem that most people have. Anytime I register email, I register a specific address to the company I'm dealing with.
Yeah, so you're smart. You're very smart.
That keeps a lot of it down.
You can do that with Google Mail, by the way. Anything after the plus sign is ignored in Google Mail, so you can have a Google Mail address, say, leo@gmail.com, and then you can actually make it a custom address for everybody. You know, if you sign up for a service, you add plus in the name of the service, and any mail that comes to you from that, then you know that they that's them, or they gave your address away.
Right. That's
a good idea. Google Mail will do that. Just add the plus and then anything else after the plus you want.
Okay. My one question was, you've talked about SpinRite and the error correction, and I got that, but I noticed it only works in DOS. It does not work in Windows XP as far as running it in the background.
It can't.
I'm wondering if you know any programs that do that.
There would be no program that would do it well, because Windows XP grabs resources when it's running. And the reason that Steve has to run SpinRite from DOS is you cannot do that effective low-level stuff while Windows is running. And any good disk utility will, in fact, reboot into DOS. So,
okay, so
there are, you know, there's like disk.
Correction.
Yeah, that's why it's better than, say, Disk Doctor or Check Disk, because it runs back. And in fact, you notice with Windows' own Check Disk, frequently it'll say, oh, I can't do it now. I'll do it on reboot. And it does it after the next time you boot. You just can't do it while Windows is running. It hogs too many resources. It won't allow you low-level access.
Okay, and a question. My Windows XP Professional Service Pack 2 CD, original CD from Microsoft, cracked.
Oh.
From the center to about halfway out, so I can't use it.
Yeah, you got Microsoft will give you a new one. You just have to call them.
Okay, so it's like $5 or $10 probably.
Yeah, there's a nominal fee. They have a disk replacement fee that they will, I don't know how much it is, but they will do it for you.
Okay, because that was quite a shock when I pulled it out of the drive.
You mean it cracked in the drive?
Apparently. I was going to reinstall, and
tell them that
it stopped.
They may waive the fee. That's a defective disk. It's not like you sat on it.
No, not hardly.
Yeah, I would, or even lightly. If you sat on it, then that's one thing. But if it cracked in the drive, you say, it just cracked. That's a defective disk. They should replace that for free.
I would hope so.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, I would tell them that and see.
Yeah, that's definitely a first.
Yeah, that's weird. Well, now in the new CD drives, they spin very quickly. If there were a defect in the disk, I could see it cracking.
Great.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call. My pleasure. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, 1247 now.
KFI On Demand, the shows you want when you want them. KFI, AM640.com.
1254, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio from Rancho Santa Margarita. Steve is on the line. Hey, Steve, welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. Been listening to you for a long time.
Yes. Thank you.
The problem with a video iPod is no one is going to watch a movie on a screen that's 2x2.
I agree with you.
So, what's coming with video goggles that'll plug into it?
There are a couple of them, believe it or not. And I've tried two, and I don't like either of them. So there are, I think, three total. There's the MyView, which is one I've tried. Now, I should tell you that I may not be the right person to review these because I don't have stereo vision. And they're really designed for people who use both eyes. And if you use both eyes, you'll probably get a better depth of picture and stuff. But I think that, what these are, you look like Geordi from Star Trek. You have kind of glasses that have built-in television screens. Some of them, like the MyView, you can still see. It's like heads up. You can see beyond you. Some of them you can't. And the idea is exactly as you say, Steve, because the screen is so close to you, it feels like a full, like a big screen. But it isn't really, because you are that close to it. So you can see, you can actually see the pixels on the screen, which takes some of that effect away. Some people, I think, get headaches from these. There are a number of companies that make these now. This is something that everybody thought, what a great idea. You've got the video source. Frankly, I think the best way to use your iPod with video is to hook it up to your TV and watch it on the TV. And if you're on an airplane, you got no other way to do it, you either hold the iPod close to your eyes, or you could try one of these. The MyView of them all is the best. MyVU.
Okay, will it work over glasses?
No, that's the other problem I have with it. The glasses get in the way. It kind of doesn't sit on the glasses very well.
Well, I would think that there ought to be some development coming in this thing instead of spending $3,000 for an HD flat screen
when they
have Wi-Fi TV, in the next 5 years.
I agree with you. I mean, in theory, and we've seen these for years. I mean, that was how virtual reality was going to work, was you'd put on this helmet. But it's just, I guess, because it's so close to your eye, I'm not sure exactly what it is about it, but it just, to me, it's not satisfying. Now, I have to say, I wear glasses, but even without glasses, it's still, even when I'm wearing my contacts, I don't have stereo vision, so it just, it doesn't work for me. So I would suggest that you try before you buy. These are almost $300. They're not cheap. It's the kind of thing you don't want to do unless you try it first. It seems like, I agree with you, Steve, it seems like a great idea. But I guess my answer would be not ready yet. Rudy, San Diego, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Rudy.
Yes, I currently have a CRT.
Yep.
and I'm ready to upgrade to flat panel, and I wanted to know the difference of the versus LCD versus TFT, and if you have any brand preferences.
Actually, TFT is a kind of LCD. It stands for thin film transistor. It's just the better way of making an LCD. They're brighter. They look better. I would say almost all of the LCDs that you see now are TFTs.
Oh, they're all TFTs.
Yeah, it's just a way of manufacturing an LCD.
I see. So, and what about your brand preferences?
And you want a standalone monitor?
Right.
Look at the Dell 24-inch.
Okay.
I think it's $800. It's huge. It's widescreen. It's designed for watching movies as well as your computer. Because it's 16:9, it's a widescreen, and I think the price is very aggressive. Dell's done a really good job. I use an Apple 30-inch, which I really love, but they're 2,000. When you get to 30 inches, they get expensive. They're $2,000. I think Dell's is $1,800, but I think for price performance, I would say either the Dells or the Samsung Syncmasters. Both are very good. If you don't want a widescreen, take a look at the Samsung Syncmasters. I use a Syncmaster, and I'm very happy with it. LCD, if you've only been using CRT, glass tube monitors, your eyes will be opened. LCDs are thin. They're bright. They look great. They have no flicker. They're much easier on the eyes. I couldn't possibly go back to a CRT. Couldn't. And it's the only way you're going to get a 30-inch display on your desk. A 30-inch CRT would be 800 pounds, and it would be 2 feet long, 2 feet deep. I mean, as you get this big, you have to go to LCD. But do it, because it's a big improvement. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 12:59. Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
September 16th, 2006.
It's going to be warm and windy. It's 76 in Fullerton, 71 in Mission Viejo, 67 in Manhattan Beach, 74 degrees in Burbank. KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks, it's 107. I'm Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
Everybody, build me up, buttercup. 107. KFI, and that's a happy-go-lucky Saturday afternoon song, isn't it? Leo Laporte, the happy-go-lucky tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. We dedicate that to Mike Lazzara. Hot Stuff, my co-host up in Canada. He loves that song. 1-800-520-1KFI. That is my phone number, 1-800-520-1534. If you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, a correction, it's a user group of the airwaves, and really, you are the most important part. Heather, Chino, welcome, KFI.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good. We are poor college students, and we have one of those big box TVs. And it's going on the blitz.
Oh, no.
And so, you know, we don't have any cable. We don't have any satellite. We just watch normal
right.
channels and occasional DVDs.
I'd get another glass tube TV.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. Because you're poor, right? But
yeah.
if you go to the electronics stores, you go to Best Buy or Good Guys or Circuit City or anywhere, and you go in the door and the plasmas and LCDs and they're all the big screens and they're all shiny new, and you have to go back in the corner, way in the back, to look for the CRTs. They're not selling them hardly. But if you look at the prices and what you get for a big screen TV, they're much more affordable. And I'm going to tell you a dirty little secret of HDTV. They actually give you a better picture. They give you a better picture. Nobody wants them because they're so thick. They're big, right?
Yeah.
But if you've already got one, so you don't have room. I mean, you know, you're used to it.
Yeah, we are.
You don't mind having a big thing. And so you'll save a huge amount of money and you'll get a nice TV.
Okay.
So I think that while nobody talks about these anymore because they're not sexy, in fact, they give you very good pictures. The only issue with tube TVs is the curvature at the corners. So if you want a better picture, they make flat screen glass tubes. They're a little more expensive, like the Sony Vega and stuff. Not lots more expensive, and certainly a lot less than any of the other HD TVs. You can even get an HD, although you won't notice if any, you don't have any HD signals, right?
No,
so,
we don't.
So the only, what I would say is don't get an HD TV. The best TV you should get is what's called an ED, or enhanced definition. There are three levels of definition on a TV. There's standard SD, enhanced ED, and high, or high def, or HD.
Okay.
Standard def is basically your off-the-air television. 480 lines of resolution.
Okay.
Interlaced. ED TV, which is what you want, is 480 lines of resolution, progressive. It's the same as a DVD. So if you want to see the DVD full quality, get ED TV. So
okay.
You said you watch a lot of DVDs. So
yeah.
To see them at the best results, get an ED.
Okay.
And you don't need an HD. And save money. I mean, we're talking hundreds of dollars, not thousands of dollars. And they don't want to sell them to you. They want you to come in and be, you know, wowed by the plasma and buy those $10,000 TV sets. But, and some of them have even taken the CRTs out. They don't want to sell them. But if you can find a store that sells them, they are much less expensive. They used to be very expensive. They're much less expensive. And they're great. They look good. And if you ask an expert, that's what you're comparing a plasma or an LCD to. The blacks, the speed of the screen, the black levels, the white levels. CRT wins on all in all accounts. I mean, they're very good monitors. Judy, Huntington Beach, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Help, I need your help.
Help, I need somebody.
I have AOL.
Well, then I could tell you right now you need help.
I know, see?
Right now, you don't
okay,
have to go any further.
I had the Security Edition.
Oh,
I didn't like it.
Yeah.
So I uninstalled the Security Edition and then reinstalled by my disk, regular 9.0 optimized.
Okay.
Now, I have lost my favorites. I still
Ooh.
Have my address book. I still have my emails, but I have lost my favorites. It's like a woman who's lost her makeup. I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Okay. The question is, are they still there?
Yes.
And they should be. You know, when you uninstalled, how did you uninstall?
I went in to start to the add and delete program.
Okay, and it should have left everything there then. And it in fact didn't empty the file cabinet.
No.
So where did your favorites go?
I don't know.
Where did they go? And
how do I find them?
I'm thinking they're probably still there. I mean, I don't think, unless they got overwritten. There are programs you can go out and get that will back up your AOL favorites, or that will find them, and maybe one of them will look in the right place. This is an interesting question. I don't know. I'll be honest. I'm not sure of the answer because I don't know exactly what that uninstaller does. I can't imagine that it would not preserve your old favorites.
And why would my address book still be there?
Right. Well, it preserved everything else, didn't it?
Yeah. Just took out my favorites. Years and years of favorites.
Oh, that's terrible. I mean, there are programs like Favo Ripper and Sync2It and stuff that are programs that let you take your favorites from AOL. Go to AOL. Here's a site you might like. AOL Eve. AOLEAVE. Well, see, this isn't going to help you because this is for programmers. It's for people who are leaving AOL. but now that I look at it, I see that it's not going to be helpful. I'll tell you what. There is an article. I'll put this on the show notes. Microsoft actually has an article saying how to get your favorites out of AOL. No, that's not going to do it. I'm just looking at all of these resources here. This is going to use AOL. So since you don't see them in AOL, it's not going to help you. If you'd called me before you uninstalled, I could have told you how to export those favorites to save them. The problem is now that you've done it, I'm not sure. What I don't know is, did the going backwards just put, did it overwrite your favorites? Did it move your favorites to another space? Or does it use a different location for favorites? And your original favorites are still there. They're just not being seen because they're in a different folder. And that's what I don't know the answer to. So maybe I'm just going to have to ask somebody to call in or put a comment in the show notes or go in the chat room and tell us how we've got to help poor Judy.
Oh, help.
She's lost years of favorites.
Years of favorites.
And
I'm
and
really lost.
That's frustrating. And I think it's very likely they're still there, Judy. I'm not.
That's the way I feel.
I'm holding out hope that it didn't erase them, but it's just looking, it's using a different place or a different location, and that it either backed them up or they're still there and it's just not being seen. So I guess what I would say is what we need to do is find somebody who knows where the favorites are in AOL 9 versus AOL 10. And where we can find those new old favorites, the old new favorites, and put them in the old AOL.
Right. Where are they hiding?
What I'm going to do is open up the show notes for comments. Leo.am, click the Saturday show. And if you've got a suggestion for poor old Judy, just put it in there. Not old, but I mean, I've just... I'm old. You're poor. Anyway, I'm just getting a deeper hole here. We're going to save
Leo.
Judy. Thank you. Thank you, Judy.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I don't have the right answer right off the
Thank
top
you
of my
very
head.
Much.
You're welcome.
Hope someone else can help me.
Yeah, just keep listening. I'm sure.
Okay, I will.
I'm sure we will either get a call or I can figure out a way to do this. Oh, look, they've already spammed the show notes. Boy, that doesn't take long, does it? They're evil. Look at this. Oh, my gosh. There's a ton of spam in there. This is why I turned off comments. And it's a real problem, you know, on the web these days with people putting... It happens on blogs mostly. I think spammers are using automated... some sort of automated software where they look for comment boxes and they just fill them with links to their sites. What they're trying to do, by the way, they know you're not going to click and go buy free online Levitra. What they're trying to do is raise their rankings on Google. And what's funny is when they do that on my show notes and on any decent blog, they're doing absolutely no benefit to themselves because of the way these blogs and other things now use what's called a nofollow tag. But boy, that's frustrating to me. It makes it hard to put comment boxes on these sites because they just jam them with the garbage. I'll tell you what, I'm going to put it in anyway. Just for Judy, and Shuby and I will just keep track on the comment spam comment box. We'll just add this to this right now. How can she get back her AOL favorite? She downgraded. Next time, before you do that, back it up. You can back up those favorites, and that's really the answer in general to all of this stuff. Back up the favorites before you do something like that. Alan Temecula, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Actually, hang on, Alan, because we're going to take a break. You'll be next, okay?
That'll work.
I apologize. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 117.
It's your weekend. We just make it more stimulating.
KFI, AM 640.
.125 KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI, 1-800-520-1534. Two lines are open right now. Good time to call. Now we're going to talk to Alan in Temecula. Sorry I had to put you on hold, dude. Welcome to KFI.
Hey, Leo. Alan Marino, how are you?
I'm good, Alan. What's up?
Good, good. Learned a lot. Big fan.
Thank you.
Big fan. Quick question. Is there a way that we could share the files or the folders in Outlook in a network with another computer?
Outlook, network, other computer. Microsoft wants you to buy Microsoft Exchange to do this.
And, I heard.
And the because that's a business application. Although I would say more and more, this is the kind of thing people want to do at home. Certainly, Apple recognizes that and allows you to sync your address book, your contacts, your calendar to other computers. Is it just the email you want, or is it the address book and calendar, too?
No, actually, it's just the folders, because I have emails that come in, or actually, I have emails that come in, and I put them in folders, and then I need my son to actually go through those emails.
So it's not even the email, it's the organization.
The organization, and he needs to take the data, put it in our ACT database.
My recommendation, this is exactly what Exchange is supposed to do, but there's another way to go that will work fine for you going forward, and that's something called IMAP. So what we use most commonly now is something called POP mail, post office protocol. You have a POP3 server, your internet service provider has it, or whoever provides your email. You use Outlook or some other POP3 client. It logs onto the server, grabs the email, downloads it to your local hard drive, and then deletes it from the server. And that's how most of us do it. Now, that's one way to do it. The way Exchange does it, and any corporate email server, like Lotus Notes, Exchange, or IMAP does it, is the mail is not taken off the server. It's preserved on the server, and your email client is a window to what's on the server. And the reason that's what you want to do is because if you make a folder or you move messages to a folder, what you're doing is you're doing it on the server, and then anybody else who logs into the server sees what you've done. So, and similarly, any changes he makes are reflected on the server. That's why you use Exchange. IMAP will do that with Outlook. Outlook is a IMAP client as well as a POP3 client, so it works just fine. You have to get somebody, an email provider, to set you up with an IMAP account. I use a company. I do this, by the way, because I have many computers.
Right.
And when I send an email, you know, if you just, with POP3, if you send an email, it sends out and you get stored into your local sent folder. But if I send an email, I want to be able to see it on all my computers. So with IMAP, it gets put on the IMAP sent folder, which is visible everywhere. Same thing, if I move an email to a folder, I want it to be moved on all my systems. So that's what IMAP or Exchange or Lotus or any of these centralized systems will do for you. IMAP is a really good way to go for this.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool.
I use a service called Fastmail, Fastmail, fastmail.fm. But there are a number of other IMAP servers, and you may even find that your own internet service provider offers IMAP. More and more are. So what you want to do is look for IMAP email servers. But okay. I like Fastmail. It's $30 a year, huge amount of storage, and it's very effective. It works great with Outlook.
Leo, can you put that in the show notes?
Shuby will do it right now. Won't you, Shuby?
Appreciate it. Hey, by the way, quick question. I got a new Dell computer.
Mm-hmm.
What do I need to do to put two monitors on the same computer?
It's a function of the video card. Many, many video cards now have dual heads. So you look on the back of your computer and see if you have two DVI connectors for your monitors.
Okay.
If you do, you're probably done. If not, you have two choices. You can go out and get one that does. Almost everybody now makes dual head cards.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can put a second card in, although that's a little trickier and maybe not as good a solution.
So go with a dual head
I would
card.
Get a dual head card. NVIDIA, ATI make them. Matrox kind of specializes in it, but they're not as, for video gaming, they're not as good. They're a slower cards. But
this is actually for business now.
Look at Matrox, Matrox.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's become their thing. They used to be a big, you know, big player in this, and then NVIDIA and ATI kind of took over and owned the high-speed video gaming, the 3D gaming market. Matrox was left in the dust. So they said, well, what can we do? Multiple monitors. So they do many dual-head solutions. 129, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
Download your favorite shows and listen when you want. KFI, AM640.com.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number, 1-800-520-1534. Dr. Dean Adele coming up in just a little bit, about 20 minutes at 2 o'clock. Meanwhile, let's talk to Father Joseph in Anaheim. Hello, Father Joe.
Yes, hi, Leo. Excellent program.
Thank you, sir.
We just recently got flat TVs for the church, and we got three 20-inch monitors. And I wanted to know, is there any way we can, we primarily will use them to display text, liturgy on the text, so we don't know.
What an interesting idea. So, and that's so the congregation can follow along and do the responses and so forth. Instead of looking at the hymnal, they just watch the screens.
Exactly.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So you want to have the same text on all three screens.
We have four flat TVs and three monitors, and I don't know if it's wise to go to all flat TVs instead of having a mixture between
I don't think that
TVs.
Matters. I don't think that matters
all
at all.
Great. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
The Kish,
and
the
also, to not to complicate the matter, we look forward to hooking up a video system later on where we have cameras throughout the church to Not at the same time, but in sometimes, in place of the text, we would like to display the different events going on inside the church.
Yeah, I don't think that's too hard, because I think the text is actually going to be... let me think how the easiest way to... Do you want to hook a computer? No, you probably don't want to hook a computer. You want to hook a TV feed up to this.
So actually, we're going to run it off of PowerPoint from laptop something like that.
See, I mean, the easiest way to do this would not be to involve a computer in it, but just have... It might not be the cheapest way, but the easiest way would be to just drive that TV, those as if they're TVs, and have, you know, when it's not showing an actual TV signal, it shows a picture of the text as if it's on a teleprompter, which you certainly could do. But let's see, if you were going to do it on a computer, then the complicated, it's easy to show the text, but then we've got to have the video come up on the computer. I guess you could do that easily by hooking up the cameras to the computer.
And can then, I hook the cameras to like a video mixer, which is connected to the computer?
Yeah, okay. Sure. Yeah. I mean, this is not going to be cheap, but you've already spent some money anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
displaying the text for now.
Yeah, what I would suggest doing is talking to an audiovisual company that specializes in this kind of thing, because I think what you need is something that's not a consumer device, but a video driver for all of those monitors. You know, it wouldn't be economical or practical to try to drive it as if a computer had four or five or six monitors. That's not what you want to do.
Okay.
What you really want to do is have the computer's output go to video, in effect, and then I think have the video go to all of the different monitors.
I can split the signal.
Then you can split the signal much more easily. I mean, it's kind of what we do on television, where when you're watching the TV, we suddenly show a computer screen. Really, what you're looking at is not as if it's a computer monitor, but it's what they call scan out. And I think that would be the easiest way. But, you know, I'm the wrong guy to ask, in all likelihood, Father Joe. I think you should probably talk to an AV company that specializes in this kind of thing. They do that all the time. If you've ever been to any event where they have screens, they can do that. They can show the output of a computer. They can show the output of a video. And I think probably you can do it more economically by doing it as if it's a television show than as if a computer display. You could still use the PowerPoint, but what will happen is the computer the video out of the laptop will go to a video splitter, right? That will then split it out into video, and then you can have unlimited monitors coming out of that thing.
And I won't lose anything with the signal degradation.
It'll degrade
like that
a little bit. That's you're going to want to make the text pretty big.
Right.
But that's okay. You have to make it big anyway, because you're not standing in front of the monitors, right? So it's going to be big anyway. I think it'll look fine. I think it'll look like TV. But you're going to have big pictures anyway. I think that, you know, if somebody's an AV person and wants to call, what's the name of your church, Father Joseph?
St. Mary in Anaheim.
So
St. Mary.
I bet you there's a good, devout AV guy who would like to help you out. So if you're listening right now, Father Joseph at St. Mary's in Anaheim needs a little hand with this. Let's see if we can help him out.
Thank you very much,
Neil. All right,
Neil.
Father Joseph.
I'll be looking into your show notes.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes, or somebody will call, or somebody might call you. I think it's something that AV guys do all the time, right? Lectures, concerts, you see it all the time. And it's not a consumer device, but I bet you it's less expensive really than trying to do it as you would if you were, you know, trying to drive four monitors from a computer. Then that's expensive. Chad, also in Anaheim, welcome KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey Leo, how you doing?
I'm good, Chad.
Question I have is, how safe would you feel using Explorer 7 as your primary browser? You know, for everyday surfing, and because I'm kind of getting tired of 6, and I wanted to, because I know it's in Candidate 1 right now. I mean, do you think it's pretty safe to use?
I think it's probably no less safe than Explorer 6, and probably safer than Explorer 6, yes. The question is it as safe as, say, Firefox?
Yeah.
And that I don't know. I think the jury's still out on Explorer 7. What I would say is if you want to use Explorer of any stripe, 6 or 7, instead of Firefox, it's absolutely possible to use it as safely or more safely than Firefox. But here's what you have to do. You have to go to Internet Options and go to the Security tab on Internet Options. And this is true for 6 or 7. And you have to turn your security level for the, you know, you have these zones. There's the internet, these local intranet, there's trusted sites and restricted sites. You're going to be modifying the setting for the internet. And you're going to turn the security all the way up high. That means it turns off scripting. It turns off anything that could be deadly or dangerous or hazardous. It also means most websites don't work very well. Then, then what you do is you click the trusted sites, and you can either do it manually or do it as you surf. You're going to add sites to the trusted sites. And the trusted sites security level can be, you know, the default is medium. You could make it low because they're trusted, right? You could say, hey, that site, I trust Microsoft.com. I trust Yahoo. I trust CNET. I trust Twit. You could turn the, I trust KFI. You could put those sites in your trusted site list. And then all features of that site will work.
Okay. And would you happen to know, now when you download it, it's going to upgrade my Outlook Express to 7 and everything, right?
That's right. And you can't go backwards.
Okay.
You can't go backwards. Actually, I don't think it changes Outlook Express. I think the current, unless I'm wrong, I don't think it, maybe it does, but I think the current is just, it's, let me look. Let me see if it upgraded my Outlook Express. I think it just upgrades Internet Explorer.
Okay.
But it isn't. It is difficult to go back once you install it. I did it, and I think it's fine. I mean, the biggest issue on 7 is there are some cosmetic issues. Some sites don't look as they're supposed to.
Okay, but when they do the updates, I mean,
not
significantly. You'd still be able to update it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. All that stuff still works. I think it's a good idea. In fact, I moved to Internet Explorer 7 on the assumption. It's certainly got a lot of functionality, like tabs. That are much needed. I think it's safe to use now. It's certainly reliable. It's quick. It's reliable. But I would say if anybody is going to use Internet Explorer, you should either do that or you should use a program like Sandboxy. That's another a very good way to do this is with Sandboxy.
Great.
And that what that does, I think it's Boxie. Let me look it up. That does is it sandboxes. It puts your sandboxie.com. And what it does is it puts your Internet Explorer in a safe zone so that it can't, in fact, infect anything.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, I think that's a very good choice, Sandboxy. We just did a little show on it on Security Now, one of our podcasts, a couple of podcasts ago. You might want to take a look at it. And it's absolutely free. Absolutely free. sandboxie.com. And what it does, as you would expect from the name Sandboxy, it puts your programs inside a sandbox where any spyware, malware, viruses, anything that program sucks in can't affect your hard drive. It's trapped in this sandbox. I think a very clever way to go. And if you're worried about using a browser, you're worried about a site you're about to go to, S-A-N-D-B-O-X, Sandbox I-E. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
KFI News, powered by the worldwide resources of Fox News. KFI, AM 640.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, 1-800-520-1KFI. That's the phone number. Dr. Dean is coming up in just a minute. If you want more of Leo all week long, you could try the Twit Podcast Network, TWIT. I'm a twit. Stands for This Week in Tech. But it's TWIT.TV. Or somebody suggested I do this to my business card. Just say Google Twit, you can even better, you say Google Twit and press, you know, the word TWIT and press I feel lucky, because that's the number one entry right there. I own Google for the word Twit. I'm not sure that's a good thing, to be honest with you. Royal Riverside, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Royal. Hey,
today's our 17th anniversary, and I bought my wife a video iPod.
Oh, isn't that a nice gift?
Yeah, she's very happy with it. And we're trying to get some of our DVDs onto the iPod. And I'm wondering, what is the best software to do that with?
Well, you got to do two things. First of all, of course, commercial DVDs are copy protected. So you have to extract the video from the DVD using a program that can get around the copy protection.
Okay.
Shrink to 5 is the one that most people seem to recommend. And I bet you Shrink to 5 would even... The thing about getting it on the iPod, it has to be exactly the right format, right?
Okay.
So I'm not sure, but Shrink to 5 is free. It's shrinktothenumber5.com. Shrinktothenumber5.com.
All right. And that's a free program.
That's a free program. And then there, if that doesn't convert it to the right format, Videora is designed specifically for iPods.
How do you spell that?
V-I-D-E-O, like video. And then R-A at the end, V-I-D-E-O-R-A. And what it does, it's from the folks who do PSP video.
Okay.
They created a converter for the Sony PSP, and then because enough people got interested, they extended it to the Xbox and the TiVo, and they do an iPod converter, also free.
Free is good.
Free is always good. Now, it's going to be a little bit of a project, but consider this part of your gift to your wife.
Right? Okay. I'm sure she'll appreciate not having to buy the movies over again.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and it's really nice what you get it on the iPod. I've done it on the Mac, and I played with it on the PC, and the Videora will do it. The key is getting it off of the original disc, which is copy protected. So Shrink to 5 to rip it. And then Videora, what you're going to do is rip it to an AVI or an MPEG form.
Okay.
And then Videora will take that and convert it into the exact form factor that the iPod needs.
Will that put it right into iTunes?
Then you open it in iTunes.
Okay.
And then iTunes will sync it up to the iPod. So it's a couple of steps.
Sounds great.
But it wouldn't be a good anniversary gift if it weren't tough.
It was tough just to get this new iPod.
That was a good gift. That's a nice gift. Happy anniversary to you both.
Thank you very much.
What'd she get you?
Don't know yet. The day's not over yet.
Okay. Take care, Royal.
Thank you, Lee.
Thanks for the call. And all the rest of you, have a great Saturday afternoon. I'll be back tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. to talk about high tech with you. Dr. Dean Adell's coming up next, though. Have a great day. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Well, that's it for this edition of The Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.